Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and our volunteer Corridor news readers Chloe Weinstein, Simone Otley, and Jaya Francis. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, highlighting an outstanding achievement awarded to the CEO of Kingston Economic Development, Donna Gillespie.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. After over 15 years working in Kingston's economic sector, Donna Gillespie, CEO of Kingston Economic Development, was recognized during the President's Dinner and Awards Ceremony for the Economic Developers Council of Ontario, EDCO, last week, taking home the Joseph A. Montgomery Economic Development Achievement Award. The award represents the EDCO's highest honor in economic development, according to a release from Kingston Economic Development. The award pays tribute to the legacy of Joseph A. Montgomery, who was a driving force behind the establishment of the EDCO and the Economic Development Association of Canada. Gillespie is the fourth recipient of the award since 2017. Mayor Brian Patterson stated, quote, "I've had the privilege of working alongside Donna for almost a decade, witnessing the remarkable transformation in our local economy and within the Economic Development Office has been truly inspiring. This award is a well-deserved recognition," end quote. Gillespie had a pivotal role in various crucial initiatives, including bringing Canada Royal Milk to Kingston, spearheading the Kingston Film Office, the creation of the first Kingston Arts Awards of Excellence, and the establishment of the Kingston-Syracuse Pathway. I sat down with Gillespie to talk about this achievement and her work in Kingston.
To get us started, I just wanted to ask a bit about how you got your start in business, and like, has this been something you've always been passionate about? Did you find it in university? How did you get your start?
My career trajectory has been interesting and rather organic. I came to Kingston to study, and at that time wasn't too sure what my long-term plans were. So bounced around in arts and humanities and ended up with a double major in art history and classical studies. And got really involved in the Kingston community while I was doing my undergrad. So started volunteering with the Kingston Arts Council, the Modern Fuel Artist Run Center. And these organizations gave me an opportunity, A, to learn what a not-for-profit or an office setting was like, but B, to get involved on a board of directors. So over time, understanding different roles, be it the treasurer, the secretary role, about board governance, about operational assessment. So that gave me an interesting background by the time I graduated. And really, my passion was always about the community in Kingston. When I was a student, I fell in love with the city. I had the benefit of having summer jobs on Queen's campus during the summer months, where a lot of students, I feel, miss out on seeing Kingston in the best 4 months of the year when they go back home. So I had that opportunity to get engaged in the community and really fell in love with it. So my trajectory has really been about community development, which led into more specifically economic development and the attraction of new investment and supporting our business base.
What do you find unique about Kingston's business community that really drew you in?
The Kingston community, and you can look at things from two sides of every coin, but there really is one degree of separation. It is very easy to make connections with a wide variety of people. I've always found the community very welcoming, very supportive. And that's really helped in my economic development role when we're looking at attracting new investment. And if I can make a phone call and ensure that the mayor or a city councillor is around the table or the head of planning if needed, or the base commander. That all makes it a team effort, and it also allows you to get a better understanding of all the different facets of the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long have you been in Kingston now then?
I came to go to Queens in 1991.
And then you stuck around after you fell in love with it?
I fell in love. I can say I took a small hiatus 6 months and went to Calgary and then came back. I needed to leave in order to choose to come back.
Absolutely, yeah. And well, recently you were recognized by the EDCO with the Joseph A. Montgomery Award after shaping the Kingston business community over all these years. Was this award something you were informed about before, or was it just a big surprise on that day?
It was a surprise. I kind of wondered if something was going on based on some of the team members going into, you know, having side meetings. But it was a surprise. It was delightful. It's quite an honor. I didn't know Joseph A. Montgomery myself, but his legacy in terms of the profession in Canada is well revered. He was, I understand, from Niagara Falls and was one of the founders of professional organizations for our profession. So the Economic Development Council of Ontario, as well as the Economic Development Association of Canada. So he's very much about looking at economic development as a profession and supporting career growth of individuals.
Absolutely. And how did it feel to be recognized in this way and to bring this win home for Kingston?
Oh, it's a huge honor. It's humbling. At the award ceremony, there was a tribute video that was created that had sort of comments from a variety of business individuals I've worked with and colleagues, present and past. And so it's quite an honor. They've only handed out this award. I think this is the fourth time they've selected an individual to receive it. So it's humbling. And it's also really, it's a nice sort of tribute to the work I've done and to recognize some of the initiatives that I've been able to start.
Thank you, Chris. And now over to Chloe Weinstein with a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the debut of Dark Highway, a documentary that covers human trafficking in Ontario.
Thank you, Jesse. On February 29th, the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, KCFF, will host the world premiere of Dark Highway, a documentary created by Kingston-born filmmaker Anna Jane Edmonds. The film is focused on sex trafficking in Ontario. Edmonds looks at the quote-unquote invisible crime through a bystander lens, taking viewers along the 401 highway to demonstrate how prevalent sex trafficking is along the corridor. Edmonds took a survivor-centered focus, which allowed her subjects to lead the conversation and narrative about what is really happening on both a local and international scale. Edmonds stated that the core of her film is the ways in which sex trafficking impacts children and how truly pervasive this crime really is in everyday life. Edmonds noted that her film is less focused on the dark details of the crime and more on how the average citizen can be more knowledgeable about the issue and work to address it. The film urges awareness and preventative action, but also tells the audience to listen to survivors about what they need in terms of support and to let them lead the conversation. In using this approach and wanting to highlight ways to better care for the individuals affected, Edmund said that the survivors felt a little more comfortable inviting her into their space and sharing their personal stories. She said that there are networks of survivors out there for a crime that many people don't even realize is happening around them. Edmonds highlighted that the survivors must be supported and that they are the ones who should be empowered to lead the change. The film started out as a short, but in developing into the topic, Edmonds and the team didn't see a way to cut it down to less than 60 minutes, and so Dark Highway became her first feature film. Edmonds is excited for the film to debut in the town she grew up in and said it works out well on both a personal level and a narrative level. The film's premiere at KCFF on February 29th at the Baby Grand is completely sold out, but tickets are still available for the second screening at the festival on March 3rd at 4 p.m. Thank you to Owen Fullerton of YGK News for that story. We move to Dinah Jansen with a story from local journalism initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstel, about another confirmed case of the avian influenza in Kingston region.
Thank you, Chloe. Recent reports have confirmed the presence of avian flu in the Kingston area. So when Melanie Dugan found a dead crow in her downtown Kingston driveway on the morning of Thursday, February 8th, she followed Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington's public health direction and contacted both the City of Kingston and Canadian Wildlife Health Cooperative at the University of Guelph's Ontario Veterinary College. What happened next caused her more alarm than finding the dead bird did. Dugan watched as two young men, neither of whom were wearing any protective gear, collecting the bird and preparing to take it to an animal waste station. Concerned for their safety, Dugan sent them away and contacted the city again, asking that any workers handling dead birds have protective gear. The CWHC reached out to Dugan and sent her a cooler to collect the bird. Upon receiving the bird carcass, CWHC conducted swab tests on the crow. These tests came back positive for the influenza A virus. A CWHC pathologist confirmed that the bird had tested positive for the H5N1 strain of avian influenza. Although the risk of transmission to humans is considered low, the CWHC still advised that anyone who was in contact with this bird before its death self-monitor for symptoms for 10 days following exposure. While Dugan is not aware of anyone handling the bird before its death, she is not very impressed with the city's responses to her inquiries, according to this report. Dugan expressed concern over the lack of proper protective equipment provided to the workers sent to retrieve the bird. She noted how potential exposure to avian flu could have long-ranging consequences for just not the workers, but broader society as well. Dugan stated that the world has just lived through one pandemic and that it doesn't need another. The city responded to these concerns and noted that at the time of the call, there had been no confirmation from the public health about avian flu in the region. As such, city workers treated it as a normal deceased animal service call. It was on February 9, 2024, a day after Dugan's call to the city, that the KFLNA Public Health confirmed the presence of avian influenza in dead Canada geese that were found along the Lake Ontario Park waterfront. The presence of avian influenza in the region has prompted KFLNA to release several recommendations to keep the community safe. Do not handle or feed wild birds. Ensure pets are kept away from sick or dead birds or animals. Avoid contact with surfaces that appear to be contaminated with feces from wild birds. Wash hands thoroughly with soap and water immediately after unavoidable contact with birds or their droppings. And protect backyard flocks from contact with wild birds. KFLNA Public Health advises residents who find dead birds on private property to consult the municipality and report to the Canadian Wildlife Health Cooperative using their online reporting tool or by calling 1-866-673-4781. Visit the KFLNA Public Health website for more information on avian influenza, as well as more detailed instructions on what residents should do if they discover dead birds. Additional information about avian influenza in humans can be found on the Ontario Ministry of Health website.
Thank you to Michelle Dory Forrestal from the Kingstonist for that story. Coming up in our next segment is Jaya Francis with a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blanchet, about the end of remote learning in the Upper Canada District School Board.
The Upper Canada District School Board will end its remote learning option for students at the end of the current school year. The UCDSB trustees were informed that the program's enrollment numbers had declined to under 100 students. The program was created as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. School boards were required to continue the program through to 2023. The Ministry of Education made it optional to offer the program after the 2022-23 school year, which the UCDSB continued. This year, elementary remote learning had four multi-grade classrooms with split grades, kindergarten to grade 2, grade 3-4, grade 5-6, and grade 7-8. All four classes were led by a teacher and offered real-time participation if a student wished. Secondary learners took classes from the normal e-learning options offered by the UCDSB and its partner school boards. Enrollment numbers for both programs have dropped significantly in the last 2 years. In the 2021-22 year, 438 elementary students used fully remote learning. This declined to 121 in 2022-23 and 72 students in 2023-24. Board administration projected that if the program continued in 2024-25, only 42 elementary students would take part. The secondary school program saw a similar decline, and at present, only 28 secondary students are enrolled in remote learning. "We are surviving below 1% of our student population with this model," said Brian Reed, principal of remote learning. Superintendent Susan Rutter stated that administration is confident in the board's ability to meet the needs of students currently enrolled in the remote learning program. She added that these personalized approaches to learning can be implemented within a traditional school setting. Reed noted that real-time elementary students were more successful than those who were engaged in synchronous learning. Similarly, secondary students in full-time e-learning did not do as well as students who only needed to take one e-learning course while learning in person. The resources used for the remote learning program will be distributed to other program delivery options for the next school year.
Thank you, Jaya, and thank you to Philip Blanchet from the Morrisburg Leader for that story. We now move to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI Amherst Island, Ted Evans, with a report on some of the new events and workshops on offer at the Amherst Island attraction, Topsy's Farm, this spring.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. A free electric fence workshop has been added to the list of events at Topsy Farms this year. The farm will be running the workshop alongside Gallagher Animal Management. Sally Bowen with Topsy Farms explains the idea behind the workshop.
A big part of the philosophy of the farm protecting against predators is that we're not just out to shoot everybody who isn't a good guy. We're trying to teach them our parameters so that the native flock, the pack of coyotes who have taken up territory in this West End, if we teach them our limits, and we partly do that not only with really good fencing, but also with hair and with a variety of things that say, this is ours, we've marked our territory, you have that, then they will keep the marauding traveling packs out.
Beyond this new event, the farm will be running its regular events for the spring. Bowen explains the details of the farm's tree grafting workshop, which is taking place March 23rd.
Either if they have a favorite elderly tree that they want to save, or they just buy one of the types that we offer online. We've got two different kinds of rootstock, a small and medium, and eight different kinds of apples this year. And people will come here and they'll learn the whole grafting technique and they will take home their own tree.
Bowen shares a successful tree grafting story of her own.
There are remnants of these trees round and around and about. I went and visited one tree that was just completely, you know, it was lightning blasted and it was hollow in the core, but there was one totally side branch, like a complete right angle. And then it turned right angles again. It went sideways and then up, and there's got two props under it. And that right angle still produces the most wonderful fruit. Just fabulous.
Bowen notes why the tree grafting workshops are important to Topsy Farms.
This is why we got started with this guy who's doing the fruit tree grafting. The whole island had fruit trees. They'd build their building and then they'd plant an orchard. And there are some remnants of these ancient orchards round and about.
Bowen explains how the first weekend of sheep shearing events will be a great learning opportunity for children.
We've invited the public school down on the, she's going to shear the, that's called the replacements, the ones that were lambs last year that were chosen as the best of the best. And so they'll be the ones that she'll take 3 days as a teaching opportunity, inviting families to come. And if the kids from the school have permission, they can be right down beside her and she'll explain and maybe even, you know, give a kid permission to handle some part of it if the teachers are all right with that.
Bowen details the sheep shearing activities going on the following weekend.
The Canadian champion for several years, shearer, is coming to with somebody else to shear the flock in about a day and a half. And we feed them five times a day, including two meals upstairs in the barn. And the sheep go in all bushy and gruntled, and they come out all skinny and mildly embarrassed. And then we soupy shuffle them up and down the road to make sure that they have all the shelter and the food that they need. And we've always done that free. We invite the public, but they have to book a time because it got very popular.
Bowen went on to explain one of their most popular events, visiting and cuddling baby lambs.
For five mortal weeks, we have people, I think every day, or maybe we'll get sane and take one day off, to come and cuddle baby lambs. We had almost 1,000 last year, about 960 or something like that. And when you have multiple births, Sometimes mama can raise two, sometimes they can raise three, but they will birth four when they're really healthy genetics and well handled. And so they can't raise that number. And so we take them off and we adopt them to a mama who's had only one if possible, but otherwise we're bottle feeding. But all mammals, all people need hugs, need cuddling, need touching, need that kind of physical nurturing as well as food. And so a family reserves half an hour with a staff person and with whatever pack of bottle lambs we have at the time. And they can just come and cuddle. And the number of people who know of Topsy Farms or have been to Topsy Farms because of that is just astounding. It's wonderful.
Bowen explained just how popular this event is for the community and the volunteers that participate.
Visiting the baby lambs, that gets booked, especially the weekends get booked, within about a day and a half of posting the options. All day long, every weekend for 5 weeks. And we've got volunteers who are returning year after year. They take a week off work or whatever, just because they love it so much.
Bowen notes how all the farm's events connect.
It's all under the theme of connect to the land, of wanting to make sure that the children understand that they aren't going to defend the natural world if they don't understand it. If they haven't had a connection to it, they're not going to protect it. And our world desperately needs protecting.
Bowen noted the widespread impact on the community by Topsy Farms.
This farm is run ethically so that we're constantly re-nourishing the soil, replanting trees. When COVID hit, Jake got a loan of equipment from Kubota, and he did 20 victory gardens in 30 days around the island, free. Just either from scratch or expanding people's resources so that they could grow their own food. And several of whom have been donating to Loving Spoonful ever since.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM Amherst Island for that story. Next up, we have CFWN Coburg's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Jeff Gard, with an update about the future of a proposed walk-in clinic in Port Hope.
Port Hope Mayor Olena Hankivsky will bring forward a motion Tuesday night for council to support and endorse the reopening of the Port Hope Walk-in Medical Clinic. The mayor said she and Councillor Les Andrews have been working since the start of the term in the fall of 2022 on bringing back a walk-in clinic for the first time in a number of years at the 99 Toronto Road location. The original goal was to have it open this past November and had some physicians lined up before they hit a snag.
It's like bringing together a number of pieces of a puzzle together. And so we made wonderful progress last year with a number of those pieces. But unfortunately, we had challenges with identifying who would be the leaseholder on the actual physical space. And so that became an obstacle for us late last year. Thankfully, I had some discussions with the county in January, Northumberland County, about whether or not we might engage them to become the leaseholders of the space. It was a very favorable conversation, and it was a conversation that ended with a motion at our last county table where the staff of county was going to move forward on sorting out the details of what that would actually look like.
Mayor Hankivsky said she was recently at the Rural Ontario Municipalities Association conference and said a report came out stating how significantly challenged rural communities are when it comes to access to primary care.
There's over 500,000 Ontarians living in rural communities that have no access to primary care, and that 65% of municipalities have no access to a walk-in clinic. And we know that in our county, we're going to lose 10 additional doctors by the end of 2025. So it makes this initiative that much more important. We recognize it is only a band-aid solution. We need more systemic changes, but this is an important addition to the health services that will be available to unrostered patients across Northumberland County.
The motion states there are currently 4,000 unrostered patients in Northumberland County. In addition, there are funding partners for the clinic that include the Port Hope and District Healthcare Foundation, the Port Hope Rotary Club, and the town of Cobourg, as well as the pharmacy at the location at 99 Toronto Road. To start, the clinic would be open Mondays, Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Reporting for CFWN, Northumberland 89.7 FM, I'm Jeff Gard.
Thank you to Jeff Gard of CFWN in Cobourg for that report. Over to Jesse Bell for the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. The run of warm weather is over, at least temporarily, as Thursday, February 29th saw a return to cool conditions with a high of negative 3. Overnight, we're going to see a low of negative 6, but things are going to rebound starting Friday, March 1st, with a high of 7 degrees and sunny conditions during the day. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, March 2nd, we have a 30% chance of precipitation, but it will be 9 degrees, dropping to a low of 2 overnight. Sunday, March 11th, is shaping up to be a beautiful day here in the Kingston region, with a high of 11 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud. Monday, March 4th, it will be 12 and cloudy, and then we'll see a return to rainy conditions on Tuesday, March 5th, with a 60% chance of precipitation. That concludes your Environment Canada weather report. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to Christina Laurie for CFRC's concert and events calendar.
Now it's time for your CFRC weekly concerts and events calendar. On February 29th, for Drag Bingo, head over to Daft Brewing from 7:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. for Rowena Way's Signature Bingo. This event is free and there is no need to register. Also on February 29th, Majors Night will be held at Grant Hall from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Choosing a program is one of the largest decisions students can make in university. It's important to make an informed choice. But it doesn't have to stress you out. Attend Majors Night to learn more about each arts and science program. On March 1st, Fresh Food Market Pop-Up, an initiative of Kingston Community Health Centers, will appear at the YMCA from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The Fresh Food Pop-Up Market brings affordable produce and chef-created gourmet healthy options to Kingston and the surrounding areas every week. Visit freshfoodmkt.ca for more information. Also on March 1st, there will be a Black History Month closing social and karaoke from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Petal Works Cafe and Studios. This event is free, open to all ages, and no registration is required. On March 2nd, Sustainability is Not a Sacrifice, a conference that aims to inspire and educate our community on how sustainable practices can be integrated into various aspects of our lives, will be taking place at Mitchell Hall from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Various speakers will delve into the problems we currently face as a globalized society and offer solutions that focus on the benefits of following a sustainable economic model that holds the community as its center. Tickets are $15, which includes admission and a light breakfast and lunch. On March 3rd, are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students and the wider trans community members? Head over to the ARC on March 3rd at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the ARC Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, you can visit gogalesgo.com. Next up is your concerts calendar for this week. On February 29th, Zibit, Keaton Sound, 92 is Rare, and guests will be performing at Stages Nightclub from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tickets vary in price and can be purchased at showpass.com. On March 1st, Georgia Harmer will be performing with support from Piner at the Broom Factory. This event runs from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased at ticketscene.ca. That wraps up your concerts and events calendar for this week.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong. Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.